Okay, and on your handout there, you've got the first one. All right? Our next inquiry is for the law of the learner. Here the search must be for those characteristics which differentiate the learner from other persons, for the essential elements which make him a learner. What is it about a person that makes him a learner as opposed to anybody else? That's what we want to try to discover today. Have you ever heard me say that we should try to reach the reachable and teach the teachable? Have I ever heard that statement? Sure. Been here for very long, you heard it. If you stay here very long, you hear it a whole lot more. That's what the Lord did. He reached the reachable. He taught the teachable. Now, how do you know who's reachable and who's teachable? Yeah. How do you know if you're casting your pearls before swine? Huh? How do you know if you're giving that which is holy to the dogs, wasting your time, or really reaching somebody who's reachable? You know, the very same chapter, Matthew chapter 7, where it tells us that we're to judge not lest we be judged, it tells us not to cast our pearls before swine. Now, there's got to be a balance there somewhere. Very same chapter. In fact, just a few verses later. It's talking about don't make judgment about the determination for punishment. But you do have to have discernment to know who the swine are, don't you? You see? In other words, there is a sense in which we can have discernment about whether people are teachable or not without passing judgment on those people, which, of course, would be wrong. All right, keeping that in mind, let's begin to look at some of these. Okay? The second step here. The law of the learner may be stated as follows. The learner must attend with interest the material to be learned. The law of the teacher was the teacher must know that which he would teach. The law of the learner is the learner must attend with interest the material to be taught. That means he has to pay attention. I want you to think with me for a while about the term pay attention. It's become a cliche. A cliche is a phrase which we've heard so many times that it no longer conveys any meaning to us. But you think about the idea of paying attention. Why do we say paying attention instead of giving attention or having attention? Huh? Because it costs something. It costs an awful lot to pay attention. It costs us in effort. It costs us in toil. If we are going to give our attention in the way that we should, it is going to be an expensive thing. Okay? The learner must attend with interest the material to be learned. Gregory says the law thus stated may seem to be a truism, but it's really as profound as it is seemingly simple. The plainest proof of its truth lies in the readiness with which everyone will admit it. Its real significance can only be found, though, through careful study. Now, if we make a statement like this and say, okay, if a person's going to be a learner, he's obviously got to pay attention to the teacher. Okay, so what? Well, let's go into it a little bit further. We're going to have an exercise this morning in the very thing that we're talking about. If I make a statement like that, you'd say, all right, I believe that. So what? How am I going to be any different? But if I can get you to think with me for a while this morning, if I can help you somehow to begin to think about what we're saying, you'll realize that there's far more in that statement than you already realize. Right? You know there's a God. Oh, yeah. Now, wait a minute. If we really believe there was a God, we'd live like it. A lot of people are willing to accept something on the basis of their superficial understanding of it. But when they really understand the implications of the statement, it requires a change of behavior. So for a person, you know, many people today, you go up to them and you say, do you believe that Jesus Christ died for your sins? Oh, well, yeah, sure. Well, how can you end up living for him? Well, you know, I do the best I can. I mean, I think the Lord helps those that help themselves, and he gives us a brain. And after a while, you listen to this person talk, and you find out, you know, he didn't believe in the Lord I believe in at all. He doesn't believe the Bible I believe. Now, he might give lip service to it, but if he really believes it, well, he'd live it, wouldn't he? There's a little church down the corner from us, and they have singing every Saturday night. And man, do they have singing. I mean, they just sing and sing and sing. And I don't certainly mean to be critical. I mean, I don't want you to think I'm being critical or unkind, you know, culturally, okay? But you'd think it was a country and western hoedown down there, okay? Now, I know what some people say, you know, live and let live, and well, they're sincere, and well, bless their heart, you know, and that's their culture, and that's what they're used to, and that's what they enjoy, and that's what they like, and let's just leave them alone. Fair enough? No, not fair enough. You say, well, you're judging their motives. No, I'm not judging their motives. I'm just saying that kind of stuff doesn't honor the Lord. And if they really wanted to honor the Lord, they wouldn't do it. That kind of stuff excites the flesh. Now, I know one thing about people that get involved in music like that. They're carnal. So you're judging. No, I'm not judging. I'm not judging. That's carnal music. You see what I'm saying? I'm just telling you that people, you know somebody by their fruits, don't you? I'm not trying to be unkind. But Christian people, we've got to understand that just because somebody names the name of Christ doesn't mean that they're sincere in their motivation and that they're sincere about the Word. People have to have a better understanding and they have to be taught. Okay, so he's talking here to us about the law of the learner. Now let's get a little more insights about this. What is attention? Attention means the direction of the mind upon some object. Attention means the direction of the mind upon some object. It means concentrating on a thing. Now, I'm sure that there are going to be all kinds of distractions. Now, you know, I hope it doesn't bother you, but I don't worry a whole lot about distractions and things like that here. You know, we have a lot of little kids in our church. You know that? If you hadn't noticed. And there's a lot of people moving around all the time. Even during Sunday school, there's workers back there. And then during the church service, you know, there's people that are getting up and doing things. I don't really notice that so much. Now, every now and then I might, if it's a distraction to somebody else. But if I'm concentrating on what I'm doing, it doesn't distract me. And because it doesn't distract me, it doesn't give me a problem. We had an evangelist here a few years ago who wanted everybody to sit still and be quiet, and he fussed at the folks a little while. And one of our guys got real offended about that. Well, I think anybody gets offended from anything that happens in the pulpit when the fellow's trying to teach the Word. You know, they probably got a problem. They do have a problem. But on the other hand, you know, I probably spoiled you all by not disciplining you more in that area because it doesn't bother me. Because I'm able to concentrate on what I'm doing. And, you know, you have to learn to be that way for a while. Last night I was sitting there, I was reading Volume 2 of William Manchester's biography of Churchill. I've been working on that for a while. Man, tremendous book. Oh, what a passage. Oh, man. Life-changing realization while I was reading this. It was this author, this guy, is one of the best history writers I've ever seen in my life. He was talking about Winston Churchill's frustration over Chamberlain and Halifax and how these two guys really were selling England down the river in the late 30s. And at the same time that he was doing that, Churchill was finishing the galley proofs of his book, The History of the English-Speaking Peoples. And he had just finished, at that particular time, the story of Lord Nelson. You remember the story there, 1700s? They were going to fight against Spain, or rather, they were going to fight against France. Napoleon was coming after him. Okay, he was coming across the English Channel. Time was right. They had bigger ships. But the only problem is, Napoleon didn't realize that the two guys who were admirals in charge of the British Navy were both former pirates. Okay, that's true. All right, and so they had streamlined their ships. The French were very excited because the English ships were smaller. But they didn't realize that the reason they were smaller is because these two pirates had made them much sleeker so they would move faster. They weren't really smaller. They were faster, and they had bigger guns, and they would shoot further. So here they come down here with half as many ships in the English Navy, and they're going to fight off the coast of Spain. Trafalgar. Anybody heard that word? You studied this battle and forgot about it a long time ago. So did I. Okay? But anyway, there they were. And Nelson is up on the bridge commanding. He's pacing back and forth. They got three ships locked broadside. They're just exchanging barrages at point-blank range. And Nelson gets hit in the shoulder. And then he fell and broke his back. And they took him below. And that was at 1:30 in the afternoon. And Churchill quoted an entry from the log of that ship's log that day and said that Nelson continued to direct the battle from his bed until 4:30 in the afternoon, at which time victory was declared and he died of his wound. Now that's nobility. And then the very next paragraph, Manchester said, but Chamberlain died of cancer in 1940. And Halifax would outlive by 16 years the 317,000 British men who would die because of his mistake. Man, that's powerful. What an indictment. What an indictment. Now, as I read that and I got so excited about that, it suddenly dawned on me. I was caught up in what I was doing. I don't know if you like that kind of stuff, but that kind of stuff fascinates me. It suddenly dawned on me that Joseph was trying to get my attention. I was sitting at the kitchen table, and my wife was cooking the chicken, you know, for lunch today. And Debbie and John and Don, Debbie's boyfriend, were playing Nintendo in the den, screaming and yelling. And a whole lot of other things were going on around me. And suddenly, when Joseph awakened me from the middle of the Battle of Trafalgar, I realized what a din there was around me. All this noise, and I'm like, good night. Hey, calm down, people, I'm trying to read. Well, see, I'd already been reading, and I'd been caught up in what I'd been reading. But when my attention was taken away from, and he really had to shake me, Dad, look at this, come here, Dad. You know, huh, what, oh, okay. And by the way, I was eating while I was doing that, too. Okay, now, after a while, when you live in a home that's kind of busy and the phone rings a lot and things like that, you get to the place where you can kind of tune things out and concentrate on other things. You know what I mean? Now, that's what we call paying attention. And it's easy to pay attention to something that you're excited about. Easy to pay attention. Now, it takes discipline under other circumstances. Now, you know, sometimes I don't discipline myself that much. Yes, Hal? Oh, is that right? Oh, yeah, it's exciting. Yeah. Well, he's right with me, see? He's just seeing it there while I'm talking about it. That's what I'm talking about. Getting that kind of an idea. Oh, listen, I wish I could paint the picture for you more. I wish I had time to talk to you about the hills on the side of Spain over there and how the water looked that day and describe the boats to you and their uniforms. I mean, it would fascinate you if you could really get into it and get an appreciation. It's like being there. But the point I'm making is sometimes if we don't pay the attention that's necessary, then we don't learn. You know, you can learn something. You can read it once and have it for life once you realize what you're seeing. Last night, now again, I fell asleep about halfway through the chapter last night. I laid down and I was going to read a little bit before I went to sleep. And I picked up my interlinear Greek New Testament and I was reading 1 Thessalonians chapter 2 in that. And I was looking through the Greek. And I came to a word there in chapter 2. I need to show that to you. And I'm illustrating a point. That's over here. I'm illustrating a point here. I came to a word in 1 Thessalonians 2 that is not in the English. And I remembered having learned this word when I was studying a course from the University of Maryland when I was in Korea. That would have been 71. And this word was in the context of the Greek classics. Anybody ever studied the Iliad or the Odyssey? Remember that? All right, what was the characteristic, the weakness, the Achilles heel? What is that quality about an epic Greek hero that causes him to have a tragic flaw? Remember the tragic flaw of the Greek heroes? What was the word? Remember? I hadn't thought about this for years. Hubris. Remember that word? Anybody ever heard that? Okay, a few of you had. Hubris is that character, that tragic flaw. All Greek classical literature, the hero had this quality called hubris. In other words, there was something about him that caused him to, although he was practically Superman, he had a weakness about himself that was his tragic flaw, and that was the thing that brought him down. Have you ever heard of somebody speaking of a person's Achilles heel or something like that? It's their weakness. Achilles, you know, it's an old story where she took the little boy, she dipped him in the river Styx, and therefore he was immortal, except she didn't get his heel all the way under, and therefore his heel was the one weak point, and he got hit in the heel with an arrow, and he died. You know, that's the story. Okay? So I'm reading along here in 1 Thessalonians 2. Lo and behold, I come to the word, but even after that we had suffered before and were shamefully entreated. Shamefully entreated. And I thought, now what is shamefully entreated? And I looked at it. And you know what it is? Hubris thentes. Hubris thentes. Accused of having a weakness. Isn't that interesting? Fascinating. Now, what am I saying? I haven't thought about that word for years. But if we can ever get ourselves to the place where we can concentrate on what we're doing, we'll have a better filing system in our brains. And we'll be able to recall things and use them as illustrations, and we'll be able to pay more attention. I'm convinced. Listen, I want to get practical with you. I'm not just talking about the theory of thinking here. I am convinced that the reason more Christian people are not effective soul winners is that they do not pay attention to what's going on around them. I spoke to the American Legion last Monday. They made me a member. They paid my dues and made me a member. It's an organization for guys who are veterans during wartime or who have served in war. And I spoke to these fellows, and I was talking to them, and I try to notice things about people. I'm always looking for something that I can see about a man. You can see it on a little pin or a tie tack or the way he wears his clothes. It'll tell you something about himself. And I say, you know, for example, you pick up little things along the way. And those kinds of little details, if you can learn to pay attention to those things, you can learn more about the person. I served in the 1st TAC Fighter Wing when I was in Tampa, Florida. It's Eddie Rickenbacker's old squadron. If anybody's ever heard of Eddie Rickenbacker, he was a famous World War I pilot, shot down, spent 30 days on a raft in the ocean, and all that sort of thing. And when he got into the war, or later on, between the wars, he said he was going to throw his hat in the ring. I'm going. I'll go, and I'll throw my hat in the ring. And the symbol for the 1st TAC Fighter Wing was a ring with a hat in the middle of it. Okay? Well, Rickenbacker later became a consultant to Eastern Airlines, and for a number of years, they used the hat and the ring to be a symbol of Eastern Airlines. Okay? You may have seen it. So every now and then, you'll run into a fella who's in his 50s or 60s who has a hat and the ring on his tie tack. You immediately know the man worked for Eastern Airlines somewhere within the last 20 years. You see what I'm saying? Now, I picked that up along the way because that was interesting to me because I served in that unit. And I know all kinds of anecdotes about Rickenbacker. In fact, I've met him. Now, here I am sitting on an airplane with a man. I look over and he's got a little tie pack that's a top hat in the middle of an oval, hat in the ring. Do I have to wonder about how to start a conversation with this man? Can I establish rapport with him? You bet I can. Why? Because I'm paying attention. People who want to learn something about others, and I'm convinced, listen, I'm convinced that people do not generally, who have learned the aggressive Romans Road soul-winning method, I'm convinced that generally they do not pay the effort that's necessary to learn something about the people that they talk to. Have you ever talked to somebody and you got the impression that they really didn't think you cared about them at all? You know, we're going to talk about this some of the days ahead. A person was asking me about that this week and said, you know, I really want to witness to people and I'm really concerned about it, but, you know, how do you, you know, if you go up and tell a person, look, I really love you and I'm really concerned about you, you know, and they kind of freeze up. Why do they do that? Why do you think they do it? Huh? Yeah, well, you haven't established your credibility with these people yet. I mean, if you go up to a total stranger and invade their personal space, that's offensive. I mean, you know, if I'm going to get right in somebody's life, and I mean, if I'm going to get right up there and talk to you, that's uncomfortable, isn't it? You see? Get away, you know. I mean, you know, that's the way people are. Nobody wants anybody coming in that close and that personal and talking about those kinds of personal things unless they have a right to. You see? Now, I mean, it's one thing for me to come and say, hey, look, hey, I love you. How can you love me? You don't even know me. What are you, some kind of kook? But if I say, you know, look, I love the Lord, and the Lord loves people, and He's burdened about them, and I'm burdened about what He's burdened about. Can I talk to you? Hey, that's legitimate. He might listen to me. But I've taken the time to think it through and to say it accurately instead of just trying to convince him of something that I'll never be able to convince him of. How can I convince a person that I love him when I don't even know him? You see? That's a totally different understanding of that. And I'm convinced that Christian people don't pay attention. We're not learners ourselves. And therefore, we're not able to know who else is a learner. So attention means the direction of the mind upon some object. And the reason I went into that in such detail, because attention is the key to the law of the learner. Everything else that we're going to study about the law of the learner hinges on that one word, attention. You will never, ever teach anybody anything until you get their attention. Hey, let me say that another way. Nobody will ever learn anything until they pay attention to the thing they're trying to learn. Fair enough? Fair enough. You are wasting your breath if you try to teach somebody something until you get their attention. Now, have you ever done that? Didn't I tell you? What did I say? I mean, how many times do I... And you still don't have his attention. Right? Have you been there? I have told you and told you and told you. How many times have I told you? I'm not going to tell you again. And the kid's sitting there thinking, oh, good, you know, heard that enough, you know. Isn't that right? Listen, you've got to get their attention. You remember the story about the mule? Anybody in here hasn't heard that? Everybody's heard that, about the old farmer with the 2x4? Okay. That is so true. You can't tell anybody anything until you get their attention. Now, you don't get their attention by hitting them with a 2x4 always. Sometimes you have to. There's a whole lot better way to get their attention, too. Maybe you can get their attention with a sugar cube. You see? You know, there's been a big raging debate about that for years, about whether you should give bubble gum to bus kids or not. I'm not opposed to anything that will get their attention so that you can point them to Christ. Now, I am opposed to things that get their attention in such a way that you can't get their attention off the attention getter. Okay? I mean, you haven't helped them then. You haven't won them to the Lord. You've won them to the gum. And that's no help. But you've got to learn to direct your attention to some object if you're going to learn something about it. Now, attention is not a constant and invariable condition. One may attend with varying degrees of absorption or concentration. You know that's true. Some of you, since you've been sitting here in this class, you've been in and out. Haven't you? You know, it's awful the other day I was doing the radio broadcast and I was reading my text. And usually when I read my text, whether I'm preaching or whether I'm on the radio broadcast, I try to stay several words ahead of where I'm talking. So if I find a word that I am not familiar with, I can have a few miniseconds there, microseconds, to kind of work it out before I get to it. I mean, that's the way you have to do when you're reading out loud. But I started thinking about something else. I started wondering if I was going to have enough tape left. And I checked up and I made some mental calculations and I checked my time and I did a few little things there. And I broke my concentration and I found out I was reading every word as I looked at it. Well, I got away with it, but I scared myself there for a minute because I thought, you know, if I come across a word I'm not real comfortable with, I'm gonna stumble here. You have to be careful about that. We all move in and out in our concentration. You do it sometimes. I mean, I know even when you're really making active effort, I watch you when I'm preaching sometimes. I know that you're still hearing me, and I know that you're still with me, and you're really working on it. But boy, your eyelids are really getting heavy, you know. And you have to kind of, you know, wake yourself up there. I know that you're struggling to make your mind pay attention, and I know it's hard. I know it is. Now, how do we get to the place where we flow with what we're paying attention to rather than having to concentrate so much, okay? Well, we have to understand that there are three different kinds of attention, each of which is important from the point of view of teaching and learning. There are three different kinds of attention. And I'm going to show you this morning one of the reasons that some people are more teachable than others, and some people are more reachable than others, and some kids, hear me, some kids are more obedient than others. Some kids are just easier to raise. Isn't that right? Some kids just sort of, here I am, you know, teach me, you know, whatever you want me to do. We've got one like that. The kid that we have in our house that everybody used to think was the worst kid we had is the best kid we have. Because he just does everything at full steam. You know what I'm talking about. Okay? That's the most teachable kid. You can't say anything to him without him being a blessing. I was talking to him this morning. You're a good son. Well, you're a good dad. I said, yeah, but you're a better son. No, you're a better dad. I mean, you know, he's just a blessing. That's all he's doing. But, you know, he's just so teachable. You know, he just got this, hey, teach me something attitude. And he's such a salesman. It's just unbelievable. Now, but then on the other hand, some other children at times, I don't think you could pry them loose from their interests and get them concerned about what I'm concerned about with a crowbar. I mean, sometimes I just feel like, you know, are you in there? You know, are you listening to me? You know, where are you anyway? You know, I mean, and really, people can listen to you. I mean, people can look at you with their eyes wide open and not hear a word you're saying. That's the truth. Positive attention, or passive attention, that's the first kind of attention. Passive attention involves no effort of the will. Okay? That's the attention of the little child. Butterfly, flies up and lands on the windowsill of the Sunday school classroom. And here's little Susie, or little Billy. And the teacher is up there turning wrong side out, you know, trying to teach this lesson, keep the attention, got puppets going and everything else, right? And the butterfly lands on the window. And little Susie, oh, wow, look at the colors and the pretty wings. And the butterfly's wings are going like that. Now, what's she doing? She's learning. But she's not learning about Zacchaeus. She's learning about butterflies. Isn't that right? Why? Because the butterfly got her attention. And next week the teacher's going to come in a butterfly suit to try to keep her attention. That's what you have to do when you're working with a little kid. That's right. You've got to find some way to capture that attention. And you've got to change it frequently. You know? Now, I'll tell you, the Lord taught me a lot of stuff about this. When I first came to Greenville, I've been teaching the adult Sunday school class in my class at Myrtle Beach, and I came here and I went to Southside and I told the pastors there, I said, boy, I want to teach. I just, you know, give me anything. Whatever you got for me. Second grade girls. For 2 years I taught that class. And it was good for me. It really was. Because you can't give them 3 points in a poem and 45 minutes worth of illustration. I mean, you know, just exhortation. Here it is. I mean, you know, but you get about 10 minutes into it and you've lost them. You got to find ways to communicate. You got to do different things and draw pictures and talk and back and forth and play games and keep that attention, because the little child has what we call passive attention. It involves very little effort of the will. It means letting the forces that play about us control the mental life. Whatever comes and goes into our attitude, concentration, you know? The more mature a person is, and may I use the word sophistication? The more sophistication a person has, the more they are able to control their own concentration. Okay? I mean, my brother and I were talking about this one time. I'll never forget the illustration he used. We were sitting in a restaurant with Becky. We had just come from the hospital there. And as we rolled Becky in, all these people started rubbernecking, you know? Whoa, you know, like this, you know? Now, that's immaturity is what that is. There was some kind of an old cartoon character that my brother and I used to joke about called Fred the Head. I don't know if any of you remember or not. It was just talking heads, all it was. And my brother looked at it. He says, well, what are wrong with people? He says, if Fred the Head were to come in here right now, he said, I wouldn't turn and look. But you know, and I know what he was expressing to me was that he was embarrassed that everybody was turning to look. But have you ever noticed? Have you ever noticed how, you know, I don't know, maybe some of you who don't have a handicapped child, you wouldn't experience this the way we do. But we'll go out in public, and little kids will always, they'll just stare the whole time. But other people try to be a little more sophisticated, they're a little more mature, they just don't look, and they kind of glance when they don't think you're looking. But then there are other people who go ahead and get over that, and just go ahead and act appropriately. Yes, sir?
You experienced that on the interstate. There's never been an accident.
Oh, yeah.
The highway
cleared off. Sure. Yeah. Sure. Sure. That's right. That happened to me on the other day on the way back to Cincinnati. I thought, well, what is the problem? Well, the problem was everybody wanted to see what had happened. They don't want to miss anything. You know, the little kid, he thinks he's going to miss everything. Now, I'm going to give you a little clue here, folks, and some of you are going to get embarrassed about this. You watch it during church this morning. Just you be, just not any more distracting than you have to be, okay? Somebody's going to get up and walk out, or somebody's going to have a need to take care of, or somebody's going to have a kid that's messing up, or somebody is going to sneeze, or something like that's going to happen. And a number of people are going to... What was that? Huh? Don't want to miss anything. I mean, I know we have some preaching going on here, and we're learning something about the Bible, but, you know, I wouldn't want to miss this sneeze. Huh? That's right. That's childish attention. Just distracted by everything that comes around. And, hey, listen. I know what all the books have said. You know, if you go into somebody's house and the TV is on, you know, try to get them to turn the TV off. Or turn the TV off yourself. You've been taught all that kind of stuff. It takes a lot of discernment. If they don't have enough sense to turn the TV off and pay attention themselves, you're probably not going to get their attention, or they're going to resent it. Or if you have to do that, you better realize you're working with a very immature person, or you have intruded into their personal space, and you're very rude. If people are not willing to pay attention to what you're saying, they're not going to hear much of what you say. Okay? All right. Letting the forces that play around control the mental life. Play about us. The primitive instinctive basic type of attention. It's noticing the stuff that you can't help but notice. That's what it is. That's what passive attention is. And people who give passive attention to the subject matter do so out of an instinctive sort of a way. As we said, it is the attention of the little child. The attention of the little child. Okay? Do you think you have that? You understand that? Yes. Mm-hmm. There you go. That's good. I remember something like that when I was a boy. It was a Mother's Day sermon. And Brother Epperson was preaching at the Christian Missionary Alliance Church where my relatives went. We were there on Mother's Day, and he stopped for a dramatic pause when he'd made a point, and some guy squealed his tires for half a block right outside. No air conditioning, the windows were open. And everybody just... And immediately the pastor said, "And I'm sure his mother is proud of him." Just like that. And everybody just laughed about it. And it was a good illustration. Now, here's some guy outside on Mother's Day dishonoring his mother with that behavior. And I'll never forget that. That's a good illustration. Now, if you don't learn to do that, there's only one other way to teach junior boys. It's not very effective. You need two things to teach junior boys if you don't learn to do that. You need a whip and a chair. Okay? And you got to go in there like you're lion taming. Okay? Now, you've got to find a way to capture their attention. And that's what we're talking about here. Watch it, chair. Okay. The attention of the little child. All right, but wait a minute. The human mind can control, rather than be controlled, the forces that surround it. Did you know that's true? You can control what's going on in your mind rather than be controlled by what's going on around it. Now, I don't mean to be unkind to anybody in here, but people who never learn to get out of the passive phase of attention are the victims of their circumstances and of their feelings. Have you ever noticed that? When you're in the military, especially the Green Berets, the Special Forces, the Rangers, all those guys, they are taught to, quote, ignore pain. How in the world do you ignore pain? I don't know. Yeah. Oh, okay. You concentrate on what you're doing instead of on how you're feeling. Concentrate on what you do. In the work with the handicapped, we get to read from time to time about kids that live with chronic pain, and they take what they call pain therapy. And there are people who have chronic pain, and there are ways that you can teach people to deal with pain. Now, when you go and you talk to people that have to live in constant pain, how do you get those people to deal with that pain? Does it somehow feel better once they learn these techniques? From a neurological standpoint, no, it doesn't feel any different. But they do not hurt as much because they learn to concentrate on what they're doing instead of on how they're feeling. But people who are in the passive attention phase never get beyond thinking about how they feel. Okay? I'm convinced the whole denominations have grown up around people that live in the passive attentive phase. That's why you have to do so many things to keep your attention. And especially is this true in this TV age in which we live. And you think about it. All the excitement of the media, and now people have to learn mental concentration. The second type, now remember, there are three, okay? Lest you get the idea that I'm suggesting to you that number two is the best, don't forget, there's the third one coming, okay? Number two is where the great majority of serious people are today. But that's not best. Okay? Immature people are in passive attention, phase one. A little bit more mature people are in phase two, but that's still not best. Remember that. This type of attention is called active attention because its first condition is an effort of the will. Active attention. It is an effort of the will. This is the kind of thing where somebody says, "I am going to do this." Now listen, people who have learned to manifest active attention And no further are the kinds of people who go through high school with A's and then can't run their lives after they get out of school. Can't discipline their kids, can't clean their house, can't do their job, and that sort of thing. Why? Because they have learned how to concentrate on certain subject matter. You know, there are some people who learn one thing at school, and that is how to be a very good student. You ever notice that? I have a buddy who went to law school. He says they have a rule. They say the guys that make A's make professors. The guys that make B's make judges. And the guys that make C's make money. Okay? Yeah. That's a joke, but there's a lot of truth in it. A lot of truth in it. Have you ever thought about it? In other words, it's the guy that gets out there. It's not the academic subject matter. You know, you're not out of school very long until you realize that what you learn in school is not what you learn in school. Huh? What am I saying? Somebody says, well, I got to get this material here. No, it's not the material. It's how you learn to think that benefits you. The reason people need to go to school is so they can learn how to stay in school for the rest of their lives. Listen, hear me. It is not what you study that makes school valuable. It is that you study. Did you hear me? It's not what you study. It is that you study. Now, what in the world does this have to do with anything? This sounds like some kind of a class in psychology or something here, doesn't it? Wait a minute, people. Christian people have got to learn to be good at influencing others. In order to do that, they've got to learn how to encourage other people to think. Now, let me ask you a question. Is anybody who has never learned to think going to be able to influence anybody else to think? I don't think so. I'm convinced that the reason most parents can't get their kids' attention, hear me, because they can't get their own attention. You ought to think about that. Okay? Another thing about this active attention, it's a determination to do what should be done in spite of allurements to do something else. That's what it is. Giving ourselves to the task rather than being distracted by other concerns. You see, it's somebody who recognizes the value of the material, who's willing to do anything that's necessary. Now, I've been in some meetings before where the material that was being given out was not all that important to me. Even if I had learned it, I don't think it would have done me a lot of good. And if I got sleepy, I just went ahead and slept. But there have been some other situations where I have been where I knew that this material was important and I needed it. And I got sleepy, and so I got up and stood in the back to where I could make myself stay awake. Have you ever done that? In other words, you can always do whatever is necessary to be able to get the job done if you really need to learn it. Active attention. Let me read you just a few things here that Gregory says, and we'll take just a few more minutes on this. On active attention. The essential characteristic of the human mind is that it can control rather than be controlled by the forces that surround it. It can rise above its immediate environment and look beyond the present into the future. It can even attend away from objects that naturally attract attention and hold itself persistently and resolutely through tasks and duties that are not immediately attractive, but which it recognizes as important and worthy and necessary. It can hold momentary fancy in leash and work resolutely and persistently toward a remote goal. This distinctively human type of attention is called active attention because its first condition is an effort of the will, a determination to be to do what should be done in spite of allurements to do something else that is pleasanter and more attractive. That's active attention. That's called paying attention. But that takes an awful lot of energy, an awful lot of effort. There is a third type of attention that I want you to see. And then we'll look at this some more tomorrow. I'm going to go ahead and take all this off so you can see it. Generally speaking, we learn more easily and most economically when we are absorbed in our work. All right? When our learning is so fascinating that it simply carries us with it. It grows out of active attention, out of effort and persistence. Now let me ask you something. We've talked about the first kind of learning that people do. That's passive learning, passive attention, where they just take a notice of what's around them because it's fascinating to them. And then we've talked about active attention, where it's hard, drudgery, and work. Okay? Which one of those two kinds of attention is most fun? Passive attention is most fun. Which kind of attention is most rewarding of those two? In which do you learn more? Active attention. Wouldn't it be wonderful if there was a way to learn to enjoy and become absorbed in that which you ought to study instead of that which imposes itself on you? In other words, if you could become a passive learner by your own actions, wouldn't that be great? That's exactly what the law of the learner says must be done. Okay? Let me show you this. That's why this third type of attention is consequently termed secondary passive attention. It's when a person has studied something and gotten so well versed about it that now they are able to enjoy it. Let's take an illustration. Went to a piano recital yesterday. We heard all the Indian songs that the kids play when they first start playing the piano. You know? Okay. Boom, 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 and all that kind of stuff. And, I mean, every kid in the recital, there were about 20 of them, his piece lasted less than a minute. You know, and it was real sweet. We enjoyed watching them, and they all got up there, and they played their little thing, and then they bowed, and that was really neat. When a child sits down, the first thing he wants to do at the piano is play a tune, right? And if he learns a little ditty, you know, Heart and Soul, or Yankee Doodle, or something like that, like they all play, every time he sits down at the piano, he'll play that. And I've seen grown-ups who will still sit down and play. You remember that? Because that's as far as they ever went with it. They were not willing to play their scales. They were not willing to do their exercises. They were not willing to learn their chords. They were not willing to learn to read music. They just wanted to play because that's all they ever learned. That was passive attention. But then somewhere along the line, somebody said, I'm going to work at this and I'm going to learn what I need to learn. And they drilled and they played and they practiced and they exercised and they got those fingers working right. And for a long, long time, they paid the price in active attention. And then you know what happened one day? They got to the place where they could hear a song and they could sit down and instead of playing da-da-da-da-da, they could play whatever they wanted to. And then they could sit down and play for their own enjoyment. Right? Now, the way you get to this third level of learning is by starting out with passive attention, then moving through active attention, and finally getting to the secondary passive attention. What time is it, Dick? 25 after? I like your watch. Okay? All right. I mean, I saw those people hanging around out there. Tell them to come on in. They might learn something. Okay? All right, that's okay. That's all right. All right. So, secondary passive attention. Now, attention of the secondary passive type is, from the learner's point of view, the most desirable to cultivate. Wouldn't you say so? Wouldn't it be exciting if you could get to the place where you have enough understanding of a subject to where you could enjoy learning it? I was talking to Debbie here a few weeks ago about history. She was taking a history course, and she says, Dad, how in the world can you enjoy this stuff? I said, what do you mean? That's fascinating to me. She said, yeah, but all these facts and all these dates and all these names. I said, oh, well, honey, you're not in the place where you can enjoy it yet. You've got to learn some more of that stuff before you'll get to enjoy it. I said, you've got to get a timeline in your mind to where you'll know where to plug that stuff, and it won't be so hard to learn. Isn't that right? I mean, if you know what was happening in France and in England and in China and in America at about the same period of time, then when you learn something new and somebody comes along and says, 1850, what do you think of? You know? Oh, what was happening in France in 1850? What was happening in England in 1850? Who was in charge in China in 1850? Now, if it doesn't mean anything to you, you're not going to learn it. It's just going to be a dry date that you have to memorize. And I'm not going to get into history anymore, okay? But if you know what was taking place at those times, if you know who the President of the United States was then, and if you know what was taking place then, all the precursor activities leading up to the Second World War, and what was happening, and for that matter, if you know that the split between the Northern and the Southern Baptist conventions came over that same issue at that same time, and that Robert Raikes was starting the Sunday school in that same year, and all those kinds of things. Well, now somebody comes along and they give you a fact, they say 1850, you've got a context in which to place that piece of information. Isn't that right? And it impacts all these other pieces of information that you know, and you learn something. Now listen, how does that relate to soul winning? You go up to the average person today and you start talking about spiritual principles, and they are so devoid of understanding that they don't even know where to start. There was a time when you could go up and talk to people about God and they at least knew who He was. You could talk about Jesus Christ and they had some understanding of who He is. You could talk about the Bible and they could pretty well recognize whether a verse that you were quoting came from the Bible or whether you were just making up some strange words. But that's not true anymore. We have people today who are absolutely illiterate about biblical things. We've got to start from square one. We've got to teach them differently. They're still in the passive attention phase. And they're going to be in the active attention phase for a long time. Every now and then you meet somebody who's in this secondary passive attentive phase. Now, same thing's true with your kids. Let me tell you something. Ladies especially, because you are the ones who suffer from this the most. You want to know why some of you ladies are so tired at the end of the day? And why you get together with each other and you joke about how you just can't keep these kids under control. You just can't get them to do what you want them to do. Huh? It's because you've been going around all day long with a bunch of kids who are still in the passive attention phase, and you've never disciplined them to make them go into the active attention phase, and therefore they have no opportunity of ever getting into the secondary passive attention phase so that they can make themselves do what they want to do. So you've been going around with a bunch of little babies telling them to breathe in and breathe out all day, and you're worn out. Isn't that right? Now, wouldn't it be a whole lot easier if you made them suffer a little bit so you wouldn't have to suffer so much? I think it would be, if I may motivate you by a selfish motivator. Because one of these days, you haven't seen anything yet about the suffering they're going to have if they try to live in life with that kind of childish attitude. What we do with little kids is we make them pay attention. Why? Two reasons. For their benefit and for our benefit. So that they will be able then to move into the next phase. You make a kid clean his room long enough, and you know what? He may get to where he likes a clean room. If you make him make up his bed every day, he may get to the place where he likes to have his bed made every day. Now, how do you get him to the place where he likes to have his bed made up? By when he's little, making him not like the consequences of having a bed that's not made up. That's right. When he's little, you make it so desirable for him to comply that he will do it. And then if he continues to do it long enough, he will eventually come to realize the benefits of it. And he'll do it himself. Right? Okay, there's got to be some desire motivators as well as fear motivators. But this is the reason that works. Little children and immature people stay in the phase of passive attention. As they grow, they have to get into active attention. But people who are not willing to pay the price in energy to give active attention never get the blessing of secondary passive attention. You understand what I'm saying? They never get the blessing of getting to the place where it's easy. They never get the blessing of getting to the place where they really want this thing. So, sometimes people who get tired of this active phase revert back and give up and say, forget it, I'm going to do what I want to. I'm going to take it easy. I'm going to go where I want to go. Let's see the subpoints and then we'll be finished. These sustained and abiding interests are to be purchased only at a price. And the price is strenuous effort. Strenuous effort. Human experience during the long ages has taught few lessons that are more dependable than that which predicates effort, sacrifice, and persistence as the chief ingredients of success. Like the one guy said, man, you sure are lucky. And the other guy says, yeah, and the harder I work, the luckier I get. Isn't that right? Sure it is. Okay? And the third step, mental toil and mental effort are only other words for active attention. Mental toil and mental effort are only other words for active attention. Okay? All right. Questions or comments from anyone? Can you see how this will help you? Can you see how knowing these things will make you a better teacher of your children? Can you see how knowing these things will make you a better teacher of those that you would win to the Lord? Can you see how knowing these principles will help you in your life generally? I want to summarize by making one statement. I am acutely aware in the middle of this study that we are into some technical stuff. And I can't necessarily give you every week the whole lesson in a package. it's going to take us probably 3 months to learn the seven laws of teaching. If you'll stick with me, you'll know them and they'll change your life. But there are going to be a number of people who are going to come to these classes and who are going to say, you know, that's really dry stuff. Why did that guy just teach the Bible? And they're going to act pious and spiritual, and they're going to miss it. But if you'll stick with me in this thing and concentrate on it, it's going to change your life. I'm going to tell you how to change your life. It'll teach you how to think. And once you learn how to think disciplined with joy, you'll be able to influence the thinking of others. And you'll never be able to be a good soul winner until you can influence the thinking of others. And you'll never be a good mama or a good papa until you can learn how to influence the thinking of your children. Now, I hope that you'll pay the price in the investment of the time and the effort that we're talking about at this class. And the thing about it is, some of you are going to come away from this class thinking, man, boy, that was rich. Oh, that's been such a help to me. And you're going to give me all kinds of affirmations about the ways that it has helped you. And that's why I'm doing it, for you. Okay? And the others of you, I hope you'll stick with us. And if you have any questions about it, if there are any problems about it, or anything you need to understand, I hope you'll let me know. And I highly recommend that you get Gregory's book. A book written for Sunday school teachers in the 1800s by a Baptist preacher. Seven Laws of Teaching. Tremendous principles. Let's stand and be dismissed in prayer. Father, thank you now for the attention of these folks today, and I pray you'd help us as we continue to learn these things together, that we might understand how our minds work, how our wills work, and how we can analyze the learning process, the law of the learner, so that we can recognize who learners are, but especially so we ourselves can be learners. Lord, we know that we'll never be effective teachers unless we've been effective learners. Help us with that in Jesus' name. Amen.